This is a big picture broadcasting simultaneously on Radio Islam and Radio Al Ansar. Hello, South Africa and the rest of the world. Ahlan wa sahlan. And how's it? Are you enjoying the long weekend? Hey? And I told you why yesterday was a public holiday. Do you remember? No? What a hopeless lot you are, eh? It was my birthday. And what makes it even worse is that none of you even sent me a gift. Hey, but wait. Hey, someone did send me a present and left it for me here in the studio. Ah, it's a lovely pen. And there's a note with no name, just a message. Happy birthday, AB. What a nice pen. Hey, wait, hang on. And it's got an engraving on the side. Let's see what it says. Holiday Inns, Cape Town. never mind. It's the thought that counts, there. But not even a card from you, Kanjus lot. No problem, Habibi. I got lots and lots of very, very lovely, warm messages. Lots of them. First one I received early this morning on my phone. Well, yesterday morning on my phone was from the National Blood Transfusion Service, wishing me happy birthday. Wow. I was really, really touched that they remembered, because it was about 5 years ago that I donated blood. Hey, they must have realized that my blood was exceptional, special, nice, rich blood, lots of ghee and gajar achar in it. And then Turkish Airlines also sent me a message, even though I traveled 8 years ago with them. That fellow at the, I think at the check-in counter must have realized that I'm a real gentleman, because I did not squeal and I smilingly paid the 40 rand excess baggage. You must have remembered. I must have created a lasting impression on him. And I also received birthday greetings from Dischem. Yeah. I went to fetch some medication at the pharmacy on Thursday, and the lady there must have checked on her computer that it was my birthday the next day and decided to send me birthday wishes, eh? Hey, how nice. Yeah, it brought tears to my eyes, Habibi. Also received one from Outsurance. No, it wasn't a funeral policy. So you see, people, there are many, many others out there who really care for me and regard me very, very highly. So I don't need your lousy good wishes at all. Okay, Mamu? Okay? And let me tell you this. I don't feel 48 at all. Seriously. Someone sent me a nice message entitled Old Age Observations. Listen to this. Somebody must have written this. I have everything that I wanted as a teenager. Only 60 years later, I don't have to go to school or work. I get an allowance every month. I have my own pad. I don't have a curfew. I have a driver's license and my own car. Life is great. I change my car hooter to gunshot sounds. People get out of the way much faster now. Gone are the days when the girls used to cook like their mothers. Now they drink like their fathers. I didn't make it to the gym today. That makes it 5 years in a row. I decided to stop calling the bathroom John. I'm going to the John. I renamed it Jim. I feel so much better saying I went to the gym this morning. Old age is coming at a really bad time. When I was a child, it was a punishment. Now it feels like a small vacation. The biggest lie I tell myself is, I don't have to write that down. I'll remember it. I don't have gray hair. I have wisdom highlights. I'm just very wise. If God wanted me to touch my toes, He would have put it on my knees. Last year, I joined a support group for procrastinators. We haven't met yet. Why do I have to press 1 for English when you are just going to transfer me to somebody who can't understand me in any way? Who I can't understand anyway. Of course, I talk to myself. Yeah, I talk to myself. Sometimes I need expert advice. At my age, getting lucky means walking into a room and remembering what I came in there for. I have more friends I should send this to, this message, but right now I can't remember their names. Now I'm wondering, did I send this to you or did you send it to me? Well, anyway, today I don't want to speak about any heavy stuff. Nah. For my birthday, the happy mood and so on, I don't want to talk about Afghanistan or Palestine or the forthcoming elections. I'm not in the mood for that today. I'll try to keep it light and breezy. Breezy, like post-Gadra beans, if you know what I mean. But it's very difficult to be joyful when there is a heavy cloud hanging over the land, a climate of sadness and fear. Now, I don't want to depress you, but this is the new reality. And for so many people who have lost their loved ones, there is no closure. So, what do I mean by this? What got me thinking was a very chilling story I came across a few days ago. It totally horrified me. It horrified me and it brought tears to my eyes. It was about Dr. Hussein Mia Hafeji. I must be honest with you, I had a very sketchy idea of who was Hussein Hafeji. So I looked it up on Wikipedia, and you should also do that. Just type in the words Dr. Hussein Mia Hafeji in Google and read about this illustrious son of South Africa. Let me give you snippets about his life. Hussein Mia Hafeji was born on 6 November 1950. Hafeji grew up in Pietermaritzburg and completed his primary school at St. Paul's School and Marian School. He finished his secondary schooling at Woodlands, where he matriculated in 1965. In 1966, he relocated to India to undertake his tertiary education, where he qualified as a dentist. In 1977, Hussein Mia Hafeji was a fresh, newly graduated dentist who had returned to what was then Natal after 7 years studying in India. The university quota system for non-white students during the apartheid years meant he couldn't get admission into a local university. And when he returned to South Africa, he battled to find employment because his degree wasn't recognized in South Africa. Hussein eventually landed a job based at what was then King George V Hospital in Durban, mainly visiting local schools to give dental care to children. His political affiliation is unclear, but according to his older brother, Yusuf Hafeji, he was politically active whilst he was in school and played an instrumental role in organizing a number of student protests in Northdale. It seems Hafeji continued his political activism on his return from India, and thus he was under police surveillance. He was living in Overport. But every Friday after work, he went to his family in Pietermaritzburg. On the morning of Monday, the 3rd of August 1977, he was arrested by the special branch under the Terrorism Act on suspicion of being a trained saboteur and of plotting to overthrow the state. At his flat, police said that they found subversive documents advocating a revolution to establish a socialist people's republic. Dr. Hussein Hafeji, at the age of 26, was dead within 20 hours of his arrest. The police, in their words, discovered him dead in the number 2 prison cell in the Brighton Beach police station. His trousers were tied around his neck and at the lowest rung of the cell bars with a handkerchief. His death was declared a suicide at that time, but his body had multiple injuries, at least 60 on his back, knees, arms and head, according to the Truth and Reconciliation Commission final report. A week ago, right, that's last week, the inquest into his death opened up again. Mohan Deva Gopal, who worked as a policeman with the special branch, spoke up about the torture he witnessed 44 years ago. Well, I read his testimony, as I told you, and made me ice cold, absolutely frozen, horrified, that Hafeji, who was said to be of very slight build, having a body like a 14-year-old. Now, I don't want to go into all the details, but here's what Mohan Gopal said about the 20 hours of torture. These are his words. There were a series of fist blows, open palm slaps, kicks, punches on every part of his body. It was completely physical. Dr. Hafeji was busted. There's no other way to describe it. He was hit so hard that he was screaming out for his mother. His mother was Fatima. The lawyer for the Hafeji family, advocate Howard Varney, spoke at the inquest last week of the late Fatima Hafeji's relentless quest for justice for her son, including writing letters to the media. One of the letters to the Natal Witness in 1978 was titled, "My Son's Death in Police Detention." And Varney read out the letter. Here's parts of it. This is what she wrote, Fatima wrote in her letter. He left home on Monday, August 1st. God knows what happened to him. On August 3rd, 1977, we heard the shocking news that he had died in police detention. I could not believe it, as my child was no criminal or terrorist. He was a noble young man and a dedicated doctor. That police found him a dangerous terrorist. Police say that he was a brave man. Yes, he was brave because he was honest. They also said he was desperate. Yes, yes, because he was in the lion's den with no way of escaping or in family of his detention. As a grieving mother, I cannot forget this terrible ordeal. My heart will always cry for my son, she wrote. There you are, folks. The words of a mother. My heart will always cry for my son. And I'm sure, listeners, that the pain stayed with her till she left this world. He hugged her and he made salam and he left her on Monday in Pietermaritzburg, saying that he will see her again on Friday, and it was not to be. For Fatima Hafizi, there was no closure. She didn't know exactly how he died. It traumatized her. It tormented her. And she didn't say a final goodbye. No closure. No closure. Well, I'm relating this because many people are experiencing this also these days. You know, I saw my sister's husband, Faisal, at a family braai. He was very strangely serious in discussing some issues with me. 2 weeks later, I heard he got COVID, so I couldn't visit him. Next thing, he was in hospital. No visitors, as you know. His condition deteriorated, and then he was gone. You know, I still can't get it into my mind that he is no more. And later today we will be having a family dinner, brothers, sisters, all the kids and husbands and wives and so on. And Faisal Musa was quite a character, full of fun, teasing everyone, in a very nice way, of course, making jokes, very lively guy. I suddenly shudder whenever it dawns on me that he will not be there today. His crazy laugh and his musty will be missing. I didn't say goodbye to him. Well, I've spoken about this future. And my mother had a brain tumor. It took more than a year of steady deterioration for her to leave this world. I visited her regularly and knew that she was heading to the end. We chatted, we cried. So there was an expectation and therefore closure. My dad had COVID last year, as I told you many times. He recovered, but his damage was great, and he also steadily deteriorated for more than a year. We chatted, we cried, but I know that he was leaving us. I knew at that time. I could say goodbye in my mind. There was closure. But for so many people, there is no closure. Suddenly a loved one is just deleted, gone, very young and even old. The laughter still rings in your ears, their laughter. Open your eyes in the morning and the realization floods into your mind, into your brain, and you shut your eyes again thinking it's just a nightmare. And so many times these days I hear that a guy I knew is in hospital. The next day he's gone. And a short while later I hear that his wife is in hospital, and then She's also passed away. Scary times, Habibi. Scary times. But hey, I told you at the start that I will not be discussing any heavy topic. And here I am, grave issues. And that's literally... I should be still in the happy birthday mood. And birthdays is also a time when you remember that soon, the final... The fuel light will come on, and then not long to go before you pass through the departure gates. The fuel light will come on, and then you'll be coming out of. There's a nice mixed metaphor for you, Habibi. Don't worry, your fro will explain it to you, Mamu. Which got me wondering about what the reaction will be if I kick the bucket. What will people say? I wonder. Hey, bro, that oh who tunes non-stop on the radio, he passed away, A.B. Dauji. Or maybe one auntie will say to her friend, hey, that handsome fellow on Radio Al-Ansar, A.B. Dauji, he's gone. Yeah. And the friend will say, oh, where he's gone to? Did he go to Russia or Vietnam? And the auntie will say, no, he went one way upstairs. Yes, folks, I'm just wondering. And I'm also wondering about what my best friend Idris Kamisa will have to say. He's been writing some brilliant eulogies recently. Great words about some great people in our community who recently passed away. And he posted all of this on Facebook and WhatsApp groups and so on. Excellent, excellent description about the life and personalities of, for example, Dr. Farid Saleh of Barberton. So I was curious and I asked Idris what he would write about me. And he answered, hell, my bro, I will be crying so much that my tears will make the paper I'm writing on get all wet and soggy. It will be a struggle to write, eh? I said, Idris, don't talk nonsense, okay? You won't be writing on a page. You'll be using a laptop. And his sharp answer was, hey, that's even worse. My tears will from the keyboard and cause an electrical problem, and that will crash my laptop, eh? Ish, you know, lucky Idris is my best friend, because sometimes I have this great urge to clap him. I don't know how his Shushu Babalini puts up with him, eh? She already qualifies to be a Jannati. And this brings me to the constant beep of the cell phone alerting to another WhatsApp Janaza message. You get two types of messages. One is the instant one that goes out seconds after the person stops breathing. So a close connection will send out immediately. Usually a nickname is used. And then after a while, the full final message comes out, announcing the person's proper name and stating this is a husband and wife of so-and-so and the father of Imran or Rueda and so on. And also the venue of the Janaza Salah and the name of the cemetery, etc., etc. I received a message recently which said, truck is gone. Hey, well, I was quite alarmed, thinking it was from my neighbor who parks his big truck on the road in front of my house. Then an hour later came the message, Muhammad Truck Khan has returned to his maker. Yes, I knew this guy well, man. He was a big-sized guy, and his nickname was Truck. Well, about a week ago, I got a message. Mosquito is dead. Well, I thought to myself, what's the big deal about that? In 1 week, I killed 5 cockroaches. But later, this message said, the full message came through, Rashid Mosquito Patel has passed away. Body uplifted at 12 noon from his residence in Overport, etc., etc. Good heavens, I just spoke to Mosquito recently and he looks so well. Big shock for me. Well, I suppose that's how it is. And people are known by their nicknames. Idris and I are from Port Shepston and he phoned me some time ago with the shock news that Mungo had passed away. And of course, that was Mohammed Patel, my school friend. We hitchhiked to Cape Town many, many years ago. Actually, there was a chap in Sheppey, you won't believe it, his name was Cockroach. Not really Cockroach, everyone knew him as Cockroach. You know, up to now, I don't know his real name. And a week ago, another school friend from Sheppey, very, very sad, it made me sad, and Hussein Sidiot left us. So how's it if people heard that Abu Bakr Dawji passed away? Some will say, hey, I wonder if it's related to AB. It'll get worse if my full name is described. Abu Bakr Ahmad Muhammad Dawji Ganchi Patel, Ghana District 14, Surat, has passed away. Hey, yeah, Abu Bakr Ahmad Muhammad Dawji Ganchi Patel, Ghana District 14, Surat. Hey, you know what? I lived for 5 years in Actonville, Benoni in the 70s. Go there and you will see a street named after me, Ganchi Street. I kid you not, Mota. Go check it out. Well, I suppose after I leave this earthly domain, nothing really matters except that perhaps a few people may about me and raise their hands in a dua of appreciation. Inshallah. Here's some wonderful words a friend Muhammad sent to me. Just listen to this. It is the softest and gentlest footprints that we leave behind that makes the most beautiful impressions on those lives that we touch. Ah, isn't that lovely? It is the softest and gentlest footprints that we leave behind that makes the most beautiful impressions on those lives that we touch. Aish. Don't you think that really captures what it means to be human? But I really have to stop with all this gloomy talk and brighten things up, okay? Yes, lovely weather here in Durban. Bright, well, not really. But it's lovely here in Durban. And on Thursday, I heard on radio that about 1,400 cars were passing escort on the highway. Joburgers heading for the sea. Well, bad news. The water is in very poor condition. Did you hear that? Very poor condition. No, I didn't say poor. I said poo, meaning excrement. It's in poo condition. Excrement, meaning human waste. No, I'm not speaking about that fellow in Overport who comes up to your car asking for 2 rand so he can buy Zol. Not that human waste. I'm talking about, and people describe it, hey, he's such a waste, that fellow, man. No. My human waste, the human waste I'm speaking about is about sewerage. Okay, I'll be blunt, Mamu. I'm speaking crap. Hey, stand up at the back who said that I'm always speaking that. Anyway, to move on. Yes, the water at the beach is seriously contaminated by sewerage. The poo has hit the fan in a very big way. Anyway, that was the situation a few days ago. Maybe since that time when that report came out that I read, then someone could have pulled the chain and flushed it all away. Ah, shame, it's not funny, eh? Joburgers will be spending their time surfing around at the Pavilion and Gateway malls, eh? And speaking about fun at the beach, next Sunday, I will be jetting off with my group for a three and a half hour flight to the sunny tropical paradise of Zanzibar. Baby powder, soft golden beach sand, leading to pristine, crystal clear, azure, cool sea water. No poo there. Luxury five-star hotel on a huge, majestic estate right at the water's edge, where the eating never stops. Fish, prawns, curries, local cuisine, a myriad of exotic fruits and dessert of a variety to titillate and tantalize the most discerning palate. A veritable feast for a king. Stone Town, a city of vibrancy where the buzz never stops, of narrow gullies of 1,000 shops where finding bargains is an adventure. Huh? A Muslim country where the kurta and tall topis are standard dress and hijabs and the occasional niqab is at every turn. The spice farm where you learn with surprise in-depth knowledge about everyday ingredients and the components of perfume. A magical mystery place is the exotic tropical paradise of Zanzibar. So much to say. I can't wait to get there to chill and charge up the battery. Well, last December, I spent 3.5 hours in the water on my last day there and then lay on the beach to work on my tan, darker shade of dark brown with a touch of metallic finish. Came out looking like a barbecued beaver, or more likely a plum gundan. So dear listeners, especially who came in their big SUVs to Durban and had to hang up their swimsuits and hang around Overport with their forever hungry kids, or just parking in the expensive beach apartments, gazing at the brown water. Did my Zanzibar adventure make you jealous? Well, no problem, Habibi. Soon, and that's December, you can join me on the next tour to beautiful Zanzibar. Hakuna Matata, Habibi, Hakuna Matata. But send me an email right now, abie@iafrica.com, abie@iafrica.com. And as soon as the itinerary is out, I'll send it to you. Very, very limited seats on the plane, boss, very few seats. But if the beach is not your scene, well, the famous Middle East educational tour to Egypt, Jordan, Palestine, Lebanon will be departing on the 17th of December, which will mean that you will have Jumu'ah in Al-Aqsa, inshallah. Jumu'ah in Al-Aqsa. What an amazing dream, eh? And there's also Petra and the pyramids and the Sphinx and the citadel of Salahuddin Ayyubi, the liberator of Jerusalem, the cave of the seven sleepers, and of course that's mentioned in the Quran, and so much more, and zipping along in the snow-filled mountains of Lebanon. Wow! Hey, on the snowmobiles, throwing snowballs at each other. Fun for the kids too. A tour that you will never forget. It is relaxed, and as I said, fun-filled. So that's what's planned for December, inshallah. And so, all together now, okay? All together now, the word is Maja. So hurry and send that email, ab@iafrica.com, or WhatsApp your email address to 082-352-3526. Okay, dear people, I really don't know why you got me talking so much about sadness and death and all of that, and all that morbid and depressing stuff. Hey, why you got me talking about that? Don't you have any other topics, Habibi? So let's change gears, okay? Let's look at some seriously useless information. Bizarre, gandu, over the top, crazy, incredible, odd, ludicrous, freaky, offbeat stories. Hey, I swallowed the whole thesaurus, eh? Offbeat stories that made it into the news. Right. And when you hear these stories or read of them, you want to just throw your hands up in the air and shout, "It's a strange, strange world we live in, Master Jack." Hey, the bullies will remember that one. And for the first one, let's look at the world of technology. Huh? Yes. No doubt at all, scientific research and development is moving forward at a dramatic speed. I'm sure you'll agree. Just look at what you take for granted. The phone you have in your hand right now, 20 years ago, if someone told you that people around the world in the future will be lowering their gazes, you may conclude that they all became good Muslims. No. No, they will be consistently looking at their cell phones. And doesn't it irritate you? They irritate the life out of you when kids are lost to the world at the supper table, busy scrolling or chatting away. Anyway, let's look at the latest cutting-edge technology. The toilet. Hey, who said at the back there? There he goes again with his crap talk. Listen here. If you carry on like this, I'm just going to pack up here in the studio and go home, okay? Khabardar. Last warning, all right? Okay, so when it comes to your health, right? When it comes to your health, your doctor will advise you to go for regular checkups. Do a blood test or a urine test and so on. But what does regular mean? And why should you get into a clinic, hospital or a lab to deliver a sample for investigation? Well, good news, folks, good news. And you heard it first on The Big Picture. 2 days ago, I read this in the respectable British newspaper, The Guardian. Hey, didn't I tell you about the mind-boggling and breathtaking uses of the cell phone? Yes, I can read any newspaper around the world. And even watch Al Jazeera live, Nohale, Abebe, live on my cell phone. So listen to this. Loo design has barely changed in 150 years until now. And let me read this from the Guardian newspaper. For the past 10 years, Sonia Grego has been thinking about toilets, and more specifically, what we deposit into them. And she says, "We are laser focused on the analysis of stool," says the Duke University research professor. "We think there is an incredible untapped opportunity for health data." As the co-founder of the company called Coprata, Grego is working on a toilet that uses sensors and artificial intelligence to analyze waste. She hopes to have an early model for a pilot study ready within 9 months. Grego believes her product, which analyzes and tracks poo samples and sends the data to an app, will provide, in her words, information related to cancer and many chronic diseases. Having technology that tracks what is normal for an individual could provide an early warning that a checkup is needed. For people with specific conditions such as inflammatory bowel disease, the device could provide helpful monitoring for doctors. At present, they are working on the smart toilet to analyze urine. Joshua Kuhn, who is a professor of chemistry and biochemistry at the University of Wisconsin-Madison and is part of the project, says, it turns out that you can detect compounds that are diagnostic of exercise. I'm showing how much you have done. You can see when an over-the-counter medication comes into the system and then clears out. You can see molecules that correlate with how well you slept, how much fat you had in your diet, where your calories intake was. And I suppose you can even detect how much of ghee you got, you're passing out, or how much of gajar achar you ate. Right, so there you are, folks. The smart toilet sensors pick up information about your load shedding and sends the information to an app which analyzes it all to see if you are in a healthy state. Yes, say. What next? Maybe an app attached to the toilet that immediately speaks to you about your condition. Hey, Dauji, stop eating so much gadra beans. Okay, Mamu? Sure. Imagine if they installed this in a public toilet. You will come to worry less about the sounds that you produce there normally and be embarrassed about the secrets people waiting outside would be hearing about you. Okay, next story. And believe it or not, it's absolutely true. It's true. It's a fact that if you travel business class on a flight, then you must be something of a Lani. But you can't compete, Mamu. Okay, Mota. Lani Mota's out there. But you can't compete with one auntie in India. ANI news agency reported this a few days ago. It said a woman in Mumbai booked the entire business class cabin on an Air India flight for her Maltese dog on Wednesday. The Mumbai-Chennai flight, A1671, it flies for 2 hours, right? The flight is 2 hours long. Has 12 business class seats, all of which were reserved by this loaded lady. Her servant and pet were the only passengers accompanying her in the cabin on the two-hour flight. A Chennai airport official told ANI News that the average price for a business class ticket is 20,000 rupees, which is about, 367 US dollars. That means that the woman's $4,400 on her travels, and that equals to 66,000. So why did she do that? Well, according to Air India, you can take a pet on board, but you have to sit right at the back of the plane in the economy class. So she wasn't too happy with that, sitting in economy class and right at the back with the pet, so she took over the whole thing. This could be a possible reason why the woman chose to book the entire business class cabin to fly with the pooch instead. Hey, well, what can I say, Habibi? Two things. The world is gone to the dogs, and the world has no shortage of mamparas. Well, here's the next story. And ladies, you'll love this one. Eh? You'll really love this one. Also from India. Let me read. An Indian man accused of attempting to molest a woman has been given bail. An Indian man accused of attempting to molest a woman has been given bail on condition that he washes and irons the clothes of all women in his village for 6 months. Lalan Kumar, 20 years old, will have to buy detergent and other items needed to provide 6 months of free laundry services to about 2,000 women in the village of Majhor in Bihar state under the ruling made on Wednesday. Santosh Kumar Singh, a police officer in Bihar's Madhubani district, told Agence France Presse that Kumar, who washes clothes for a living, was arrested in April on charges of including attempted rape. No date has been set for his trial. Nasima Khatun, the head of the village council, told AFP, "All the women in the village are happy with the court decision. It is historic. It will boost respect for women and help to protect dignity," said Khatun, who is one of the village dignitaries, who will monitor Kumar to see that he's doing the job well. Women in the village said the order had made a positive impact by making crime against women a subject of discussion in their community. The subject of discussion. Yes, sir, you know, I can just imagine how the women will be standing there. They must be laughing at this Ulu as he goes about collecting women's dirty clothes. Hey! Hey, Dobi Wala! Mere kapre acche se saaf karna, warna ek thappar marungi. Can you imagine that, eh? All shouting and laughing at him. Okay. Let's see what else I got to. I like that one, eh? Hey, Dobi Wala! Mere kapre acche se saaf karna, warna ek thappar marungi. Must be feeling like a real Ulu, this character. First class laddu. One last story. You know that it's there are many people and even animals who made it into the Guinness Book of Records with some crazy feats or maybe some features. For example, a dog with the longest ears in the world, or the world's tallest man, and so on. And there's also some very crazy stuff. And the latest edition of the Guinness Book of Records has got this. Let's see, where is it now? Yeah. Let me just read you some of the crazy records. This is a British woman, Bethany Lodge, a gymnast since a young age, scored the titles. This is the title she managed to achieve for the Guinness Book. The fastest 100-meter forward rolls, that means somersaults, the fastest 100-meter forward rolls in 42.64 seconds, and the most backward somersaults by a female in 30 seconds. She did five, very fast. An American guy called Zion Clark, who was born without legs, took the record for the fastest 20 meters walking on his hands, achieving the feat in 4.78 seconds. Ah, amazing, right? And Letitia Kay from the Ivory Coast set the record for the most skips over a person's own hair in 30... What is this, man? You skip over your own hair. So she recorded the most skips over a person's own hair in 30 seconds. And that was a total of 60. And she said, according to the Guinness Book of Records, Letitia braided her natural hair and then added extensions to form the rope she used to use to skip. This is what has been recorded. So she made a long rope. She put some extension, made a long rope, and she skipped 60 times in 30 seconds. Hey, talk about crazy stuff, eh? Crazy, crazy stuff. You know what? I just thought about something. Right. We're going to put somebody in South Africa into the Guinness Book of Records. And in the next edition of the Guinness Book of Records, I'm going to enter Ghulam Bhai from Mirbank. Yeah? Huh? Ghulam Bhai from Mirbank, who is able to do two really amazing things that should get him into the Guinness Book of Records. And here it is. In Ramadan, from the time of the Maghrib Azan to the time that he stands up to make Salah, he is known to polish off 38 samosas and 8 glasses of milk. That's really amazing, eh? That's the first thing that he can do. 38 samosas and 8 glasses of milkshake from the time of the Azan right up to the time he stands up to make the Salah. The second is even more amazing. Also in Ramadan, while standing shoulder to shoulder in the masjid, he can deliver in every 2 rakats at least 62 nose-fracturing Halim burps. Hey, that's his proud record, eh? 62 nose-fracturing Halim burps. That's his record, and he has promised to practice very, very hard, seriously hard, so that he can improve on his amazing talent next Ramadan. And so I'm entering him for the Guinness Book of Records. Hey, before I get to the light at the end of the tunnel, okay, now I have something very, very important to say. So please, dear listeners, listen very carefully, okay? If I have offended anyone, if I have offended anyone with some of the things that I've discussed today, then, dear listeners, I unreservedly and very sincerely, from the bottom of my heart, say, hard luck, Mamo. Just put your displeasure in your samosa and chow it, okay? No. Hey, I'm only joking. I totally, totally apologize for any and all transgression that ruffled your sensitivities and sensibilities. How's that, Brazo? Nice, eh? Nice. So, Mota, please don't send any angry anonymous letters to the radio station. I know who you are. I'll come to your house and pull your dirty, okay? Watch out. Watch out. Right. Light at the end of the tunnel. A young boy went into a small shop in Overport to use the payphone. Remember the payphone? Well, he went to use the payphone, which was right there near the till point where you pay for your goods. And he put his money in to this payphone and dialed a number. Well, the shop owner observed and listened to the conversation. He could hear everything, what this guy was speaking and what the other person was speaking. And the boy said, the number that he phoned, he said to the lady there, "Madam, can you give me a job of cutting your lawn?" And the woman at the other end of the phone line said, "I already have someone to cut my lawn." And the boy said, "Madam, I will cut your lawn for half the price than the person who cuts your lawn right now." And the lady said, "Hey, I'm very satisfied with the person who is presently cutting the lawn." And the boy, in a very urging tone, he urged her and he said, "Madam, I'll even sweep the floor and the stairs of your house for free." And the woman said, no, thank you. And with a smile on his face, the boy put the receiver down. The store owner, who was listening to all of this, walked over to the boy. And he said to him, son, I like your attitude. He didn't cough like that. He said, "Son, I like your attitude. I like the positive spirit. And therefore, I would like to offer you a job." And the boy says, "No, thanks, uncle. No. And the shop owner said, was very surprised. He said, "But you were really pleading for one." And the boy replied, "No, sir. I was just checking my performance at the job I already have. I am the one who is working for that lady I was talking to." What do you think of that? That, my dear listeners, is called self-appraisal. Self-appraisal. Right. Well, don't you try that and phone your boss and tell him you're looking for a job, maybe as a clerk in the company where you work. Don't phone him and say, because he might just give you a shocking answer and say, Hey, I got one hell of a lazy fella here, man. Takes 2-hour lunches and he sleeps at his desk and all that, man. Hey. Yeah, so come in for an interview." That should give you a shock there, right? Right. Okay, you Joe Burgers, have a nice day. Have a nice stay. Don't go into the water, Habibi. Otherwise, you will find yourself in sheer difficulties. Right. Until next week, this is AB Dawji bidding you all. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.